You're listening to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with me, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Thank you for tuning in to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity in your life and in your business. I'm Tom Reber of MotorHeart.com, and today I'm excited to have my guest, Mark Rifkin, on with us. Now, before I introduce you to Mark and we start talking to Mark, I want to give you a little background on him. Mark has been training, competing, coaching, and studying the world of athletic competition in numerous forms for the past 43 years. He was an elite gymnast, ultra-endurance athlete, competitive bodybuilder and powerlifter, and has been instructing hardstyle kettlebells for the past 10 years. He works as a personal trainer in Palo Alto, California, and teaches and lectures all around the world. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So what's it like in California today? You just shared that you just went on a little walk. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was 45 degrees and foggy. So hopefully we've been in a drought for a couple years now. So hopefully you can get some rain. It's been pretty cold. It was in the low the upper 20s, low 30s the last couple weeks. So it's brisk. We're not used to it.
Well, you know, that's shorts and half shirt weather in Illinois, man, in this time of year. So we're about 6 degrees. I think we're about 6 degrees today outside of Chicago.
You can
so
have that.
I don't, I don't have much sympathy for you in the 30s and 40s, man. So I wanted to quickly share why I invited you to be part of the Strongpreneur Podcast and why I thought of you. I know I reached out to you a while ago. One of the biggest reasons, I've seen your name around the strength industry for many, many years. And I know, you know, you're over four decades in this business. And my whole mission with my company and what I do is, at the end of the day, I really want to help people live stronger lives and build stronger businesses. I want to help the average entrepreneur, you know, raise their game, build strong businesses, enjoy their quality of life. And I thought, what better way to do that than to introduce some of the concepts and the mindset from the strength world. And that's why I wanted to have you on here today.
Cool.
And so, you know, I know we talk here a little bit about in your intro about you've spent about 10 years training people to use the kettlebell. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and why you like the kettlebell so much?
Well, you know, I was pretty much broken at the end of 2000. I had herniated my back powerlifting. I had done 13 years of competitive powerlifting and pretty hardcore. I competed four times a year and was, you know, fairly squatted and deadlifted triple body weight. I put some, and I started off with a bad shoulder and a bad knee from gymnastics years before. So it finally got to me in 2000, and I had gotten to the point where I really was checkmated. I couldn't really walk. I couldn't run. I could, you know, I couldn't train. And, you know, squatting and deadlift were out now. My shoulder was jacked from bench pressing. And I actually was looking for a center-held weight for my clients as a personal trainer. I wasn't looking for the kettlebell for me. And I had an article in a magazine called Milo, which is a strength journal, which is still around. Really excellent thing by Randy Strawson. And in that article, I wrote an article called Stones in the Afternoon about lifting rocks and the basicness of it, the primitiveness of it, and the simplicity. And in that article is Pavel's first article, Vodka, Pickle Juice, and Kettlebells. And I saw, oh, wow, this it's a weight with a center handle. This looks perfect for what I was looking for my clients, because I use basic movement squats and deadlifts, but I never wanted to put a bar on their back because it wasn't appropriate for them. So I wanted the kettlebell, and I got one, and I got the DVD. And as soon as I started swinging it, I realized, like, oh, this is just like gymnastics. It's just like swinging high bar. And I took to it immediately. And lo and behold, my back started getting better.
Getting better.
And pretty soon I had, you know, realized that this was something that was actually going to rehab my back, and it did. So I fell in love with it. And then I just fell in love with the simplicity of it. Got to know Pavel, got invited to go to the CERT, which was an unbelievable thing that I actually got through it. And then got into the teaching and the coaching. I got promoted by Pavel, and just the last 10 years, it's been amazing. First with the RKC, and then with Strong First.
That's great. You know, you've mentioned two or three times here when you were telling that story, you used the word simplicity. Mm-hmm. And I was drawn to the kettlebell because it was so simple. You know, like you, I grew up an athlete. I was more of a football guy and stuff. Mm-hmm. And squats and deadlifts and, you know, in the Marine Corps and a lot of fitness. Mm-hmm. And strength has always been part of my life. And I was introduced to the kettlebell probably about 4 years ago. And from the moment I picked that thing up, I realized how quickly mm-hmm. it was going to humble me.
Yep, you and everybody else.
That's right. And it's over the last few years, I've really seen some similarities between kettlebell training and running a business, building a strong business.
Interesting.
And you know, and a lot of it is just rooted in the simplicity of it. It's not easy, but mm-hmm. it's very simple. And as we talk a little bit here about building a strong business, you know, you've been, you know, like we talked about, you've had several businesses. You've been part of a lot of things. You've built your personal brand over the last 40 years. When you hear the phrase strong business, what are some things that come to your mind?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is really being organized. You know, it's like, you know, knowing your market, knowing your product, and really having what you're doing being well organized, not complicated, but organized. Mm-hmm. And being really expert in what you do. I think that really makes a big difference. If you're just selling, if you know, selling something just to sell something, you don't really believe in it, to me that's problematic. I can't do that.
Have you ever done that?
Well, when I was real young, I had various jobs where I was just, you know, trying to make a living and just doing the job, and I hated it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been coaching since day one. That's been my main job in one form or another. I was a gymnastics coach. We owned our own gym, a world gym, for 9 years, and I was able to, you know, run that business as a business and coach people at the same time on the side. Hmm. And then we got put out of business basically by, you know, the economy and logistics of the mega gyms. And then I went into personal training full time. But what comes down to, you know, the simplicity of running a business, I think you really have to be focused on what your market is, who your customer is, and what you have to give them. That's mm-hmm. what I would say.
You know, I hear all the time from small business owners how, you know, I mean, the big complaint is everyone's wearing way too many hats, right? Mm-hmm. And we have all these different roles in our business and things to get done and goals that we set. And one of the hardest things, it seems, for a small business owner to do in any industry is really prioritize that organization. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many hours in the day, right?
Sure.
Do you have any tips or things you've learned through the years about how you organize your day? When you look at that massive list of stuff that you got to get done and organize, you know, how do you make sense of that?
Well, first off, you have a list. That's what number one. If you just you put it down on paper, that makes it so much easier. And then you prioritize it just in that sense. It's like, what's the most important thing that has to get done? That's at the top. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. You know, so, if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority, right?
Sure.
So you have to prioritize. You have to choose. So you choose what's on that list. And then I think the biggest thing for me personally is to not being overwhelmed by that list is just do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, once you have it down on the list, goal number one is this, and then you get that done. You don't have to worry or, you know, be anxious about goal number five until you get through goal numbers one through four. So as long as, for me, if I have to try to keep it in my head, that's when it becomes problematic. Once it's down on the list, then I just knock it off. And if something doesn't get done, it goes to the top of the next day's list. But that's helped me tremendously, is just, again, being organized, being focused, and getting things done.
So let me share a comparison that with what you just said about getting stuff done and being focused and having those priorities with what I've seen by using the kettlebell over the last few years. Mm-hmm. Certainly don't have your training experience and knowledge and chops, but I, about a year ago now, went and became certified as well with the kettlebell, because I was just drawn to it so much. I just wanted to learn more about it, because my whole message is help you be stronger. So I figure, what better way to do that than learn this stuff? But anyway, what I found that I think carries over to a small business owner is when we start with the kettlebell, we start with the hip hinge, we start with the swing.
Mm-hmm.
And that swing transfers to so many other movements and lifts.
Right.
And so, you know, if you don't have a good swing, you're not going to have a good clean. And if you don't have a good clean, you're not going to have a good press. And if you don't have a good press or a good clean and swing and all that, you're not going to have a good snatch.
Right.
And however, and so what I took from that is I moved it over to our to-do lists, and trying to keep things simple, I write down those things that I have to get done. And then I ask myself, what is the one thing that if I accomplished it would almost have a domino effect on the other things?
That's good.
Like the swing does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do any of that other stuff without a good swing. I remember not being able to press a certain amount of weight with the kettlebell, and Mark Chang was mm-hmm. my team leader, and he's like, hey, you need to re-clean the bell. You know, your clean was awful. Your hips were all messed up and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as soon as I nailed that, then I pushed the weight up. You know, it was fine.
There you go.
And so I think that's, you know, a great way to keep it simple for people is and you nailed it, is just, you know, work those basic things that are going to have the highest impact in my day,
mm-hmm.
and prioritize them. Because like you said, not everything can be a priority, because if everything is, nothing is.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about some of your injuries.
Well, the thing with my injuries, I had a gymnastics accident essentially when I was 17, my junior in high school. I was doing a twisting tumbling move, and I hit the ground in a bad position, which happens a lot in gymnastics. My foot stuck to the ground, a wrestling mat. I'm sure you remember those old wrestling mats.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're sticky and they're soft. My foot stayed, my body kept twisting, and I had a full dislocation of my knee. My coach somehow put it back in. Then I went to the docs literally immediately, and he redislocated it, testing it. So I had two full dislocations in the course of an hour. They did surgery the next day, and then back then in the dark ages, you know, it was pretty primitive stuff. And, you know, I was in a cast for 8 weeks, and I got out of the cast, and rehab consisted of, you know, a very sadistic nurse trying to do leg curls with my knee to break up the scar tissue. Now, I'm not even close to exaggerating. My knee got to bend to 90 degrees, and I said, I'm done. I can't take this anymore. So basically put an ace band on it and went back to gymnastics practice. It was
That's what we did back then, right?
Right.
You know, rub some dirt on it, put some tape on it, quit your whining, and get back at it.
And I did that, and it worked out pretty well. I did really well the next year. I won state championships. I set an all-time, all-around record for the state. I got a full ride to Iowa and did really, really well for the next 3 years in Iowa, despite my knee. And then my junior year, I guess I have a bad time at junior years, blew out my shoulder on rings, which was just another, you know, freak accident. I'd had tendonitis and bursitis in my shoulder, which for gymnasts is like, you know, getting a hangnail.
Right.
And just one day, for no really good reason, I went through the bottom of a giant swing on rings and my shoulder ripped out. And I'd had enough. And I said, you know, if after my knee, I said, if I ever need another surgery for gymnastics, I'm done. So I quit. And that was the first injury was at 17, the second injury was at 21. And those pretty much were, until I hurt my back in 2000, were the two main injuries.
Okay.
I couldn't do upper body stuff, so I started running. And that's what got me into ultra stuff.
Yeah, which is crazy, by the way.
Well, I didn't say I was sane.
It'd be a lot faster if you took the car, man. That's all I have to say. So,
well, the reason I got into ultras is because I wasn't fast enough to run a proper marathon. So I figure I can't go fast to go long.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. throw double the mileage and put some hills in there and do some other stuff. Right, there you go. So I read a while ago, and I believe it was in the context of you talking about your injuries, you had some thoughts on, there's a quote about how pain is temporary and glory lasts forever.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, but the original quote was that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And what was your opposite flip to that?
Glory is very temporary, and injuries last forever.
Okay.
So glory, I mean, depends. You know, people get very confused when they talk about pain. You know, I had people tell me that, you know, I advocated the foam roller too much because the foam roller caused pain. And I told them, if you think the foam roller is painful, you've never been in real pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference to me, quite a difference between the effort, the painful effort of, you know, serious muscular contraction or training to muscular failure or, you know, fatigue. That's that type of pain versus, you know, joint dislocations, muscle tearing, you know, injury pain. I'm not ever advocating that.
Right.
But the whole idea that you should be afraid of the effort or the fatigue of it is silly. But people don't realize that when they really tweak things, you know, those injuries, they, you know, you do something when you're 20 years old, invariably when you're 40 years old, that thing comes back and says hello. You know, everything's okay until when you get older. And I've got a lot of friends that had a lot of, you know, if you're an athlete, you're going to get hurt. It's just that simple. If you're not getting hurt when you're an athlete, I don't know any real athletes that haven't been banged up.
Right.
So especially if you're a competitive athlete, then that goes without saying.
So how much of this pain that, you know, athletes and people in general deal with, how much of it that gets worse later on are giving us signs way before that we should pay attention to, but we ignore? I mean, is most of it kind of like that?
Oh, I think you got to pay attention, a lot of attention to it early. And I think that was the lesson I learned, is that we ignored the body maintenance stuff that people need to do.
Yeah.
That we didn't know about it, but now we know about it. It's like when, you know, those are signs, those are indicators from your body telling me, pay attention to me. You know, I pulled a muscle, I strained this, I strained that. It's like, you need to get that squared away before you start pushing again. Those are the things you don't ignore. Fatigue is one thing, muscular effort pain, that's soreness, that's different. Not to say you shouldn't pay attention to that, but it's, you know, people tweak things all the time and ignore them, and you know, little things turn into big things.
Yeah,
you want to nip it in the bud.
Well, you know, as you know, we're both coaches, and I'm a business coach, and I see the same thing with businesses. I see these things that become big problems later on. Mm-hmm. They start as these little pains in your business and in your life.
Right.
And if you don't address them early on, they become a big deal. You know, the fact that you might be 3% inefficient on your product or service at this point in the game when you first start out might not be a big deal, okay? But as it adds up and you create these bad habits,
right?
You know, that only gets worse. You know, or I think of the, you know, I remember when I first started my first business years ago. It was, you know, I'm a football guy. I'm a Marine. You mm-hmm. know, I'm wired to gut through things,
right?
And there were signs in my first business that I was headed for big trouble if I didn't, you know, take care of that. And so I think it's very similar, again, how you could look at how we train our body and how we build our businesses and the mentality in both, that, you know, you got to listen to your body. You need to listen to your business. It's telling you things.
Yeah. And, I mean, oh, absolutely. And people, like, you know, set goals, and goals are great, and, you know, it's like, but a lot of times they throw the baby out with the bathwater trying to get the goal. I mean, if I look back now on the numbers that I, you know, I pushed through injury, or, you know, trying to get numbers with powerlifting or things like that,
mm-hmm.
Looking back on it now, no one really cares. I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying, is like glory is very temporary. If, you know, if I told you my numbers from powerlifting and I said, oh, I wish I had 20 more pounds, or I wish I would have done this, looking back on it now, it's like, who cares? At the time, it was everything, because I didn't have perspective. But again, if people need to learn how to get perspective early on.
Yeah.
Because it will, you know, like I said, it's the glory of it's temporary, but those little problems will come back and haunt you.
Well, we all want to pound our chest and go, hey, look how much I can do. You know,
right.
Look how much weight I could lift. Look how big my business is, or how much revenue I've done, or whatever. I was recently talking to somebody about the goals they were setting in their business, and they really wanted to double their business. And I said, well, why would you want to double the revenue in your business right now when the revenue you're bringing in is not as profitable as it can be?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've seen in my very short time around the fitness industry per se, I've seen a lot of people try to lift weights that their body's not ready for them to lift yet,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on mobility or things like that. And so I think we've got to really get humble and and say, listen, I'm going to get stronger. The business will get stronger. My body's going to get stronger, but I have to do it in a way that's sustainable.
Progressively.
Right. Right. You know, you hop on, what do we hop on YouTube right now? We do a search for like people doing deadlifts and stuff. It's pretty bad, isn't it? You know, well,
it's all bad. Yeah. If you look at it that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's again, you know, so you start looking for top end stuff and it's a rough climb for everybody, even on the web. You look at like one of the things like, you know, you look at master's levels, powerlifters meets and you go there and like, it's like, you know, Night of the Living Dead. It's not a pretty picture. I mean, the guys who keep sacrificing everything for, you know, this number or that number, mm-hmm. when there's no balance, you know, it's like, that's the other thing too. It's like, you know, going for and obtaining balance in your life and in your training. I mean, I've had some really good experiences in the sense that I've been to the very top. I mean, I was, you know, inches away from, you know, being able to be on an Olympic team. And I've been to the very bottom where I literally couldn't walk. Mm. And it's humbling, and it gave me a huge perspective on the importance of the basics. How, you know, like when I couldn't walk, I really didn't care what my squat barbell squat number was. I wanted to be able to walk like a human mm-hmm. being. And so now I have a completely different perspective on the relative importance of things, you know, from my business as well.
Yeah, tell me, and we'll get into the business here in a minute, but you know, I think if people are paying attention, they're going to be able to make the connection here. So when you had those rough times of injury and you were at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
Yes. I imagine you had some occasional times mentally that were pretty dark.
Oh yeah.
Tell me about that. What kind of head trash did you have? How did you motor through that? How did you move forward?
Well, in one sense, I've had so much experience with that because it happened so early to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was literally, you know, when I got hurt the first time, I mean, it was completely out of the blue. Everything was going perfectly. And, you know, I went from literally being, you know, the next rising star in gymnastics in the state to broken and crippled, right?
Yeah.
So I really had to pull my head out of my butt and get back in. That one was relatively easy because I hadn't had any experience with all that downtime. The second one was very dark, you know, because I literally clawed my way back up. I rehabbed myself. I got to the point where I was like, I was convinced I'm going to the Olympics. And in the time I got hurt, I had literally made just huge breakthroughs in my gymnastics. And I was, is like I learned how to do gymnastics for the first time. Everything I touched, excuse me, worked. And then the bottom fell out and I pretty much fell apart.
Okay.
And I quit school. I went back home, which of course didn't work. But then I found for me, it's always, that was the beginning of realizing, okay, I can't do this. I'm not going to the Olympics in gymnastics. What else can I do? And that's been the recurrent theme for the last, you know, 40 years. Is like, okay, I can't do this, what can I do? And that's what I start looking for. I couldn't squat, but I could swing. And that's the best example. That's what the kettlebell saved me. It's like, okay, I got to the bottom of the barrel. I can't power lift anymore. I can't, you know, I can't run anymore, but I can swing. And okay, and I got a perspective on that because I'd gone through that so many times in the past. And then I got injured again. You know, I had some weird back injuries. You know, the back injury thing was really, really bad. And that was, you get to the point where, you know, you're just in constant pain. I mean, I lived in constant chronic pain for, I can't even remember how many years. And you just kind of smile your way through it and you learn how to manage your day. Because at my point, I only had so many steps in my body, you know, like I, you know.
And how old were you then?
That was 10 years ago. The last 10 years until I got my knee replaced 2 years ago,
okay.
They were really, really rough. I mean, many times, like I'd go to the airport to go teach at a kettlebell certification. And by the time I got from my house to the airplane gate, I had pretty much used up my steps for the day. And I was like, okay, buddy, you got 3 days of 12 hours of teaching and demonstrating.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to gut it out. And pretty much I did. So I think a lot of it was that the attitude You know, you have to be tough. You have to, one, be able to let things go, you know, and not hold on to them. You know, it's like, okay, what's going on right this moment? Can you get through this moment? Again, like I said, as far as the list, just like staying in the moment.
Yeah.
What's happening right now? Deal with that. Deal with the other stuff later.
So how do you make that distinction? Because, you know, I know there's a lot of people, you know, if somebody's listening to this podcast called the Strongpreneur Podcast, chances are they're competitive, they're type A, mm-hmm. they care about being strong, and they want a strong life, strong business. That hopefully that's why they're here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
With that comes people like me that sometimes we don't know what that line is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning this now. I'm 45 right now. My wife's a yogi.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to personally find that place where I go, all right, in the moment, listening to what's happening in my body mm-hmm. or my life right now versus, you know, gutting through, manning up, and doing what I got to do.
I think you got to do both. I don't think one is, for me, it's one's not exclusive. It's not one or the other. It's both. Because a lot of times manning up and doing what you've got to do that's what the moment calls for.
Right,
okay.
Boy.
It's like,
yep.
You know, it's like, okay, I've got to do, like today, you know, I'm doing these workshops in February and I'm in the middle of writing the manual, you know, and it's Sunday and it's supposedly my day off. And it's like, I've got a lot of writing to do and I got a lot. It's like, not exactly what I want to do. I got to do it. To me, one of my favorite quotes of myself mm-hmm. is that strength is an attitude, not a number. It's not a data point.
Yeah.
Because I've been very, very strong, you know, with big, big numbers. And I've been so weak in terms of numbers, but I had to be strong in my attitude to do my rehab. Sometimes it was just like, can I get out of bed and get to mm-hmm. work? And that's strength. I mean, strength is like, if you live long enough, you will see your strength go through all different phases. If you measure your strength by how many plates are on the bar, you're going to be very upset in a certain point because it goes up and down. But if you measure your strength in terms of your ability to make yourself do what you need to do, regardless of whether you want to or not, then you're always training, right? So you don't want to take out the garbage or whatever. You make yourself do it because it needs to get done. That makes you stronger. Every time you do something like that, it makes you stronger. Or are you going in the other direction?
And it's really really kind of back to what you said in the beginning about, you know, strong business obviously being organized, but another word you used was focused. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, being focused on what success or strength really means to you as an individual and not allowing yourself to get caught up in the comparisons.
Right.
You know, it's really easy. I remember I went dark in my head for a while. I was part of a coaching group with my old business years ago. Great guys, great group, great coaches. But in my own head, I kept looking at these other businesses and where they were ahead of me in,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they'd been in business 10 and 20 years longer than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't mature enough at the time to have some perspective that was healthy. And then, you know, now I'm really big on us, you know, understanding what's right for us. What mm-hmm. is the right strength for us? What is the right success for our business? How much is really enough? Where's my sweet spot? You know, I joke about the time that I found the kettlebell a few years ago. If you would have asked me my definition of being healthy, if I could have reached in the back seat, grabbed my water bottle and not pulled a muscle, I probably would have been happy.
Yeah, I've been there,
you know? And I'm finding that the older I get, you know, my definition of what being strong is has changed a lot. Doesn't mean I still don't like to lift heavy iron.
Same here.
But I'm much more in tune with what it means for me as an individual.
Well, everything, just like in life, right? Everything has a cost. Everything has a cost associated with it. If you want to grow your business, that has a cost. If you want to stay small, that has a cost. There's a choice to be made. You want to lift heavy iron, there's a cost associated with it. You want to choose to sit on the couch and watch TV, there's a cost mm-hmm. associated. It's about choosing. You know, it's funny, one of the biggest epiphanies in my life was when I took a microeconomics course.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never a math guy, I hated it, I had to take it. So I took this economics course and the light bulb turned on because what I realized through that course was that there was no not choosing.
Hmm.
Choosing nothing was still a choice.
Right, right.
And that once that light bulb goes, it's like you have to choose. There's no way out. Choose. Because if you don't choose, that's a choice. So there's no way around it. And then you just take responsibility for choice. So that means you have to be thoughtful about, okay, what is this choice? Am I willing to live with the consequences of this choice? And yes, no, maybe. And then you go from there. So, and it's that series, one choice after another. I mean, I've had so many, you know, I mean, I've got my business set up. I'm a personal trainer. Everybody these days, everybody's a strength coach. Nobody's a personal trainer. I'm a personal trainer. You know, I get up real early. I train 6 or 7 people. I work Monday through Friday. I'm finished by 12 noon in the morning, you know, and my day's my own. It took me a long time to get here. I could work 10 hours and make more money, but I want to have that balance. I've chosen, This is enough. And again, it's like, I want to really cultivate my client. I know what, I'm a service provider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the economy goes down, I'm the first guy they cut.
Right.
And I plan for that. I save money. I put stuff away. It's like, I have no fallback position, right? I don't work for anybody else, but hey, you work for a big company. They have a bad quarter. You get laid off too. There's no security.
Right. Right. Either way, you gotta figure things out like that. So, right. You know, you bring up working, being done by around noon each day.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you do a lot of speaking. I know you do a lot of writing. You do, you know, you have a lot of things going on. What I want people to hear, though, is how, what I hope they hear through what you just said is you've really taken control of your business.
Mm-hmm.
You've really said, I'm going to run the business and not let it run me. Because how easy would it be for you to fill your day, you know, with client after client after client? And if it's anything like me and the coaching I do, when I'm on the phone with clients, different parts of the country and in the world and things like that, I've learned where my sweet spot is too. Mm-hmm. Because once I go over that sweet spot, I'm mentally not as strong as I need to be.
Yeah, no, I hit the I don't care anymore button. It's like, I don't care, man. You could pay me $300 an hour, I don't care.
Yeah, and that's not fair to anybody.
Well, right, and then that's not a good long-term strategy. I mean, I give a lot to my clients. When I'm there, they've got my 100% attention. I'm like I consider myself a professional training partner. You don't have to give me any energy. You just have to pay me, and I give you all the energy that you need to do, you know, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, whether it's mobility, flexibility, strength, endurance, you know, physicals, you know, correctives, whatever you need to make progress in your physical journey, I'm gonna do my best to help you with it. But I get up at 3:45 in the morning, man. So I get up.
Say that again. What time?
I get up every morning at 3:45 a.m. So I can be at. I got a 30-mile commute. I'm at the gym at 5:30, so I can make sure that I get my stretch out done before my first client is at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm. What time do you go to bed?
8:39 at the latest. Usually 8:30, but then I come home. I gotta do my training. You know, and then my second half of my day, it's like I've got, you know, my Facebook business, essentially my blog. I do a lot of my email, take the client managements in the afternoon. It's not because I'm finished training clients doesn't mean my business articles that I have to write, you know, manuals, things like that, preparation or just communication with my audience. That's a big part. So I go home, I train, I have my lunch, I take an hour nap, I get up, I start the second half of my business, which is, you know, my online stuff.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have a pretty solid routine.
Oh, I love routine.
Yeah, you love routine. Yeah.
I love routine.
And I find that when I'm not following a solid routine, that's usually when I'm more stressed. I'm not as happy. You know, my life is more of a mess. My business is more of a mess. Even if it's just on the inside,
you know?
And
that comes out. You think it's hidden, but it's not.
Yeah, routine is huge. Tell me what you would tell somebody who just says, "Well, my business is just too unpredictable for me to have a routine." Well, how would you answer that?
Well, you have to. You know, I'm not pretending to be an expert in all kinds of business by any means at all. But I know, for me, everything that I know pretty much comes from training. So for me, training is the source. So I know that without routine in my training, it doesn't go anywhere. If you've got to get up and decide, well, do I feel like working out today? The answer is going to be no. So if it's on the schedule, it's on the schedule. Mm-hmm. So I can't, it's just on the schedule. So setting up a routine, and again, you go through variations of what actually works. I mean, I didn't get to this routine, you know, I've been doing personal training since 1979. It didn't get there automatically. It was, you know, it's an experiment. You try this, does it work? Yes, you keep it. Does this work? Parts of it work? Not. There's always a way. I mean, the bottom line, and this is another thing I learned from training, especially from my ultra endurance stuff. You have to pace yourself. You know, if you're running 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles, you're riding 100 miles on a bike or something like that, there's no way to get there faster than one rep at a time, one step at a time. You have to pace yourself. So if you think, okay, I'm going to work 16 hours a day to make my business, how long do you think you're going to do that before you get sick?
Right.
You have to be in balance. Use carb. And most people's, the thing with routine is, how productive are you actually being?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you think you're working 14 hours a day, but how effective and how efficient is that 14 hours a day? And if you're not taking care of your health, how long are you going to be able to maintain that?
Yeah, I read a book, and I'm probably going to butcher the name here. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. I think it was something called like Your Brain at Work.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic gist was you only have so much mental energy.
Right.
And use your best mental energy as early on in the day on the highest impact, highest priority tasks that you need to do, so that if anything gets your scraps, it's the things that aren't as important.
Right.
And usually with a lot of us, it's the opposite of that. You know, and in the book, he talks about like, don't check your email first thing in the morning, because the minute you log onto your email, your Facebook page, you're using some of that brain power. And so what I found is, you know, my best routine is when I get up in the morning, I my first hour, I grab my cup of coffee, I go into my office at home, and I write.
Right.
And if I write, it's funny, I found if I'm going to write a blog post, I'll have that blog post done, posted, ready to go easily within 45 minutes to an hour, like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't follow the routine and I try to get it done throughout the day, it probably takes me 4 hours because I'm chipping away at it.
Right.
And how inefficient I am, you know, so.
I'm the same way. And that's my best time of the day also. And that's, people always say, well, you know, Mark, why don't you write a book? It's like, you know, because the only time that I could effectively write creatively would be those first couple hours a day. And that's when I make my living.
Well, you could get up at 2:45.
No, this is it, dude. This is the 3:45 is not even early morning. It's really still middle of the night.
Yeah, it is.
But so that's it. That's as early as I can wake up and you know, be productive. So if I ever have the time where I don't need to do those first couple clients, I actually would be able to write something productive. I mean, I can write my own. My blog is basically just my workout log, and I can play on Facebook at night, but I can't really write something creative. So I think you're right. I think the first things that you do whenever you have the best energy, you know, some people, you know, are just not morning people no matter how much coffee they drink. So it may be afternoon, but you've got to figure out, one has to figure out when your best energy is and what's your most important thing to be done, and go from there and put that there. But again, so much of this, you know, you said you're going to be 45. You are 45.
Yeah, I turned 45 a few months ago. So
I mean, that type of, you know, maturity. I don't know if one, you know, I know some fairly mature 25-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And I have, my son's 25. He's pretty good in some aspects. But I think it's, you have to almost go through the ups and downs and hopefully learn from them. To get to a place where that maturity and wisdom, you start like, I don't want to make those. I've already made that mistake 3 times. I don't want to make that again. I'm tired of making, you know, the same mistake. And I think that's when you go on. And I think the really sharp people are the ones who just look around them and say, okay, I'm not going to make that mistake. I'm not going to make that mistake. Yeah. And they can literally learn from others' mistakes without having to do them themselves. Those ones really get fast.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about those ups and downs and tough lessons. You know, I've always said that I believe that you need to have your nose bloodied a few times in order to become the leader that you were meant to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, if you can look at somebody else getting their nose bloodied and you can learn, that's better.
Well, so, you're still going to get your nose bloodied. You just may not get it bloodied on the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every time, you know, from all the different businesses that I've been involved with, you know, you think everything's going fine, and then you know, like when I had my studio, I'd been there for 9 years. I thought, oh great, I'm going to have 10-year business. My business is going great, and then they wouldn't renew my lease, and I had to literally start all over. Not really. I mean, I still get my clients, but I'd had my own shop for 10 years, and I wasn't used to renting space. It turned out to be the best thing I could have done. So you never really know. That's the other thing. If you've gone through these ups and downs enough, you start to stop judging them and thinking, okay, well, this on the surface looks like a bad thing, but it may very well be the best thing that's happened to you.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I won't go into it in detail now because I know we're running out of time here, but I wrote a blog a while back how firing blanks was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And my wife and I tried for several years to have kids and couldn't. And we were blessed in that we were able to adopt our three kids. And that ended up being the greatest thing that ever happened to me personally, and I know us as a couple. So, well, listen, I got one more question for you, and I know we joked around it a little bit with this when we were emailing back and forth setting this up, because you might have more than one answer here, but I find that people fall into mediocrity when they're when they allow fear to paralyze them, they allow fear to lie to them, and you know, you've been around the block a few times. What's a time that you can think of in the past, or maybe even something that you're going through right now, some sort of fear that you know that you just need to go toe-to-toe with? You're going to walk into the punch, not let it reach full strength and get to you, but you're going to close that gap, if you know what I'm saying. And, you know, so that you can beat fear to the punch, so to speak.
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, like in my answer to you in the email, it's like I've been doing this since, you know, I was 17. I mean, it's like getting back up. And you know, after my knee injury, and it's like that was pretty freaking traumatic and painful on numerous levels, and like getting back into the gym after that was, you know, that set the stage for me learning how not to give in. And you know, on a personal note, you know, my dad, when I was 13 years old, came down with multiple sclerosis. And that was, we went from being really wealthy to really poor, like almost overnight. And I love my dad. My dad's gone now. You know, I love my dad, but I saw how he handled that. And he basically got in bed and stayed there. And I pretty much said, you know, that ain't me. You know, I'm going to get up no matter what. I'm going to fight.
Yeah.
And that pretty much set the stage for me. It's like, you know, I'm walking into the punch, because that, you know, you get punched enough, you realize, it's bad. It's not that bad. You still get up. And it makes you stronger. I mean, just recently, you know, I resigned from Strong First, and there was a lot of, not so much fear, but you know, I had a lot of status there, and I had a lot of connections and things. Like, okay, am I making the right decision, you know? And it was like, okay, I mean Pablo gave me all kinds of great opportunity. He recognized me, gave me a lot of status, and it was great, but it was time to move on, and I had to make that choice. And it didn't seem like I had to. There was nothing pressing that I had to, but it was time. So you know, basically I think it's important to be comfortable as a man. Now, I'm not going to speak for women because I'm not a woman. I don't understand the mindset of that. But for as a man, yeah, I think you have to be comfortable walking into the unknown and letting things fall out as they will, dealing with it as it happens. And that's what I was talking about with your wife, and the balance between being a yogi and being tough, right? And gutting out. It's like you got to be able to be calm with the sense like, okay, I'm walking into this. I don't know what's going to happen. Then whatever presents itself, then you man up, and then you do what you need to do. But you've got to also be able to be relaxed enough with the unknown. And that's where I am right now. It's like I just resigned a couple months ago. I have a couple things set up. I don't know what's going to happen. It's not really my business. It's a side business. But still, it's a big part of my life for the last 10 years.
Right.
And now I'm like, okay, the main thing is stay calm, stay focused, and be ready for whatever presents itself.
That's great. You know, I was recently watching I think it's on the History Channel. There's a show called Vikings, and you talk about going into the unknown, and they're talking about getting in their ships, and instead of raiding to the east from Scandinavia, they're going to get in their ships and go west into the unknown ocean. Mm-hmm. And this group of guys, they're taking a vote whether they're going to go. And the one guy looks at his friend. He says, "Are you going to go?" And the friend says, "Of course, brother. I need stories to tell my kids." And exactly. I just thought it was such a cool answer. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I hope to inspire as we go, you know, with hopefully this episode does for people that, you know, take that shot. You know, we want to inspire risk in your life, the good
right.
type of stuff. And, you know, so that you have not only the stories to tell your kids and your grandkids, but so that you can look in the mirror and you go, you know what? I did everything I could to live a strong life, to take what I was given and really step up with it and do all I could and max out.
I think men need mission and purpose in their life. Mm-hmm. I really do. I mean, regardless, you know, I think why men tend to die right after they retire is it's not about the money. It's the lack of a mission and purpose. And I think as long as we, you know, have a mission and purpose that we believe in, we're going to have strength, we're going to have energy, we're going to have vitality. And I think, you know, being able to go into that unknown and say, okay, this is my mission, that's purpose. I don't know how it's going to turn out, mm-hmm. but I'll be strong enough to handle whatever comes my way. I think that keeps making us stronger.
I wholeheartedly agree. It certainly, as a man, and I do know that this obviously applies to women as well. So,
sure.
You know, it's funny, we talking about yoga earlier. The more yoga I do, the more I realize how I'm not strong. So it's crazy. My wife's this little tiny thing that, you know, makes me do these routines and I'm in pain in like 30 seconds. So,
exactly.
So Mark, thanks for taking time with me today to share a bit about you and your story and what you're doing. I appreciate the time you spent. I know we could have kept going on. I'm having a great time and I hope you are too.
Oh, absolutely.
If people want to connect with you, you know, how do they do it?
They can email me. I sent you my email. That's always open for that. I have my blog, riffsblog.blogspot.com. Those are the two easiest. I'm pretty close to my limit on Facebook, so it's hard to get Facebook friends, but that's always an option too. But again, the email, the blog's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
And spell out the blog for us.
It's riffsblog. That's R-I-F as in Frank, S, blog. riffsblog.blogspot.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for hanging out with me today. I look forward to getting to know you more as we journey on. And I had a great time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So everyone, that's it for this episode of the Strongpreneur Podcast. Take what you heard today, look in the mirror and apply the things that you need to apply in your own life so that you can wage war on mediocrity in your life and in your business. And don't forget to build a strong life and strong business at motorhard.com. We'll see you next time.